Back in high school, my friends and I would sometimes sleep over at each other's house. And late at night, we'd sometimes talk religion. One night, I stayed overnight with my friend Betty. I was a Unitarian. She was Episcopalian with all the passion of a convert. There in bed, sometime around midnight, we'd been arguing something about religion. I don't remember what. And finally, she said to me, "Well, Sarah, some people have grace and some don't, and I guess you don't." Then she rolled over on her other side and went to sleep. I was a little ticked, but I was enough of a universalist to know she was wrong. Whatever this grace might be, I knew we all had it in equal measure. But what was it? Could grace mean anything to you, Hughes? The grace she meant was the free, unearned gift of God's acceptance. Come back with me, if you will, on a side trip to Germany 400 years ago. Martin Luther, the monk who set off the Protestant Reformation, was not the first person to write about grace, but he broke with tradition when he said that grace is enough all by itself. You don't have to buy God's acceptance by giving money, or earn it by going on pilgrimages, or even by helping your neighbor, important as that is. Luther said, yes, do help your neighbor, but don't do it to prove yourself or make yourself acceptable. You already are. Help your neighbor out of compassion. Do it because your neighbor needs help. That was not just all theory for Luther. He got there by a painful path I could identify with, and maybe some of you can too. As a young monk, Luther was driven by perfectionism and guilt. He tried and tried to do everything right. He worked harder and harder, but it never felt like enough. Not hard enough. Not good enough. How can you be good enough for God? Talk about stress. What saved him from despair was an insight that God accepted him already, just as he was. He didn't have to earn or deserve God's love. It was a gift. That insight must have been a huge relief. And if anything, realizing his salvation didn't depend on trying so hard may have increased his energy to do what mattered. It's interesting to note that Luther made his biggest impact on the world after he let go of trying to prove himself, after he recognized the gift of grace. So here we are, Unitarian Universalists, 400 years later. What does all that or any of that have to do with us? I still believe in the grace of Luther and my friend Betty, the free, unearned, unconditional gift of God's acceptance, and I still believe we all have it. And if you don't like the God language, unconditional grace is with us just the same. Gifts don't require a giver any more than gratitude or thankfulness requires someone to thank. We receive free, unearned gifts every day, unrelated to our merit. The air we breathe, the sunshine and the summer rain. And acceptance doesn't require being accepted by someone. You have inherent worth and dignity. You are a child of the universe. You have a right to be here. As the theologian Paul Tillich said, we have moments when this sense of being accepted allows us to accept ourselves, whether or not we're recovering perfectionists, whether or not we struggle with self-esteem. We can accept ourselves, knowing that we have enough and that we are enough. The grace of acceptance has two sides, and feeling accepted is only one of them. Think about the ways grace comes up in everyday speech. We talk about accepting setbacks with good grace, grace in defeat, aging with grace. That last one seems to come up a lot in my conversations these days. Used in this way, grace means acceptance in the sense of us accepting grief and loss, accepting change. This grace has other names too: peace of mind, serenity, enlightenment, the peace that passes all understanding. Accepting doesn't mean judgment or lack of judgment. It certainly doesn't mean approval. It just means acknowledging that the world is exactly as it is. And joyful or sad, that can be a very peaceful thing. I love the evening prayer from a New Zealand prayer book. It is night after a long day. What has been done has been done. What has not been done has not been done. Let it be. The Beatles' song, Let It Be, came out back in May 1970. When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Now, with my Protestant UU heritage, Mother Mary didn't speak to me all that much. But I always liked the Beatles, and I thought there was some wisdom in those words, let it be. I was living with my parents that year. My parents were activists, engaged in the community and social justice. They'd marched and protested. They'd played a part in integrating the restaurants of my hometown. And when my mother heard me play that Beatles album with the song Let It Be, she challenged it in no uncertain terms. "That's fatalism," she said. "That's just giving up. When you see something that's wrong, you have to challenge it. You can't just let it be." Acceptance was a word my mother was not about to accept. I wasn't sure how to respond. I thought in those days that acceptance and action were opposites, or that doing one meant setting aside the other, at least for the moment. I don't believe that anymore. I'm not going to tell you this morning or even suggest how to choose when to intervene and when to stand back, when to give to the homeless person on the street and when just to smile and say good morning, when to show up for a protest, and when to go for a walk in the woods. What I want to say this morning is that whatever you decide to do in any particular case, your decision involves both action and acceptance. That walk in the woods can be an action to replenish your spirit. And the things we more often label action, things done for other people or for social justice or for the future of the planet, call for a lot of acceptance along the way. To act with grace is to accept the costs your action may demand of you, perhaps costs in time or relationships or risk. It's to accept that you don't fully know what your action will achieve. Acceptance lets you save your energy for constructive action rather than wasting it thrashing against all the factors you can't control. If you're familiar with the Serenity Prayer, feel free to say it with me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. So what about all those things I might be able to influence, but certainly can't control? I'm one of many forces working in a complicated world. All I can change or control is my own action, and sometimes not even that. Do my best and then let go of the outcome. Accept the result with grace and move on to whatever I'm called to do next. But that seems to imply a sequence. Act first, then accept. And so does the reverse idea that you have to accept first what's happened in the past and how things are right now before acting to affect the future. I no longer believe that action and acceptance are alternatives or even separate phases of a cycle. I believe they're part of the same thing. They go hand in hand. I was raised on the parable of the Good Samaritan as a model for how to be in the world. A man was walking from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was set upon by robbers and beaten and left for dead. First one man and then another came along, saw the victim, and passed by on the other side. But the third man to come along, a man from Samaria, took pity on the injured man. He bandaged the victim's wounds, put him on his own donkey, took him to an inn where he gave the innkeeper money to cover the man's expenses and asked the innkeeper to take care of him. As I'd always heard the story, the two who passed by on the other side were the people who let it be, accepted things as they were, didn't want to get involved. The Samaritan was the man of action, the very opposite of acceptance. But at some point, long after I'd left my parents' home, it struck me that the reverse interpretation worked just as well. The two who pass by on the other side are men of action, in control of their lives. They have business to do in Jericho, and by gum, they're going to get there and keep their appointments. Not for them to accept that anything along the road might throw off their plans. And you could say that the Samaritan is the man of acceptance, the man willing to let it be. He too has business in Jericho, plans for the day, money in his pouch and things he plans to buy with it. All of a sudden, here's a guy who needs help, and the Samaritan goes and helps him. He does what's called for in the moment. He accepts that he's not going to make his appointment. He won't have enough cash left to buy the things on his shopping list. The innkeeper might not even keep his promise to take care of the guy. The Samaritan has the grace to do what needs doing and let go of his expectations. Life pretty often doesn't go the ways we planned. The unexpected twists can be delightful or painful or both. We make choices, and every decision for one thing means losing a chance for something else. Some of our choices won't turn out the way we intended. We can thrash in frustration, or we can accept life as it comes. I've been told there's an old Hungarian saying, there hasn't been a situation yet that hasn't worked out somehow. How does a sense of grace play out in everyday life? Research studies show that acceptance of what can't be changed is a major predictor of life satisfaction, especially in older adults. Other research has found that a gratitude practice, a conscious awareness of gifts received, improves health and increases empathy and compassion. I recently heard the advice, give from the overflow. The idea is that when you give from obligation, from duty or guilt, it's never enough and it's very easy to feel drained. But when you give from a sense of gratitude and abundance, like an overflowing cup, your cup will always be full and there will always be enough. I'd like to offer you a few questions for personal reflection. We'll share a brief silence after each, and it may be that there will be some of these questions you'd like to ponder more during the week ahead. Do you feel at home in the world, as though you belong, you're accepted, you have a right to be here? Does that sense of being accepted, or the lack of that sense, affect your ability to accept yourself and others? In difficult times, or when things don't go according to plan, can you move into a place of acceptance and grace? And And finally, is there anything, any practice or idea that can strengthen your sense of grace in your life? The grace of being accepted is always there, whether or not we're aware of it. The grace of accepting is up to us. Joy and woe are woven fine, wrote the poet William Blake. And when this we rightly know, through the world we safely go. Amazing grace.